Great, thanks, Paul. Great to see you all. And we're just finishing this series in Genesis 1 to 11. And just a couple of camera lines, brilliant. Well, look, we're in Genesis. We're in Genesis 1 to 11. And, oops. What we're going to do is we're going to start by thinking about. We just got a bit of noise online. How do I meet people? Oh, cool. We're all in. Great. Sorry. We're in. Let's look at Genesis chapter 11. Let's look at verse 4. Just the end of verse 4 of chapter 11. And it says, the people say to themselves, let's make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the whole earth. I don't know what you think of when you read that. Let's make a name for ourselves. I mean, at first glance, it seems quite proud, doesn't it? We're going to make a name for ourselves. And I think pride is the issue going on in Genesis chapter 11. But I wonder if before we start pointing the finger at the people there, we maybe reflect a little bit on whether there's something of us in the people of Babel. I mean, we might not want to make a name for ourselves in the sense of wanting to be famous, wanting to be on the front cover of Hello magazine or something like that. But I think we all do want to make a name for ourselves in the sense of wanting to establish ourselves as being in some way significant, of having value, of having worth. You know, think about if our colleagues were out for a drink and we weren't there and our name came up. How would we want people to respond? We'd want them to sort of treat us with respect, with value. We'd want people to say, oh yeah, he's such a great guy, you know. What we wouldn't want is when our name came up, for people to say, who? I've never heard of him. And that's the kind of fear here, because on the one hand, they're saying, let's make a name for ourselves. That's wanting to be significant. The flip side is lest we be dispersed over the face of the earth. They don't want to disappear into obscurity. You know, sometimes people might say, what is it you want to be remembered for when you're gone? Bit of a morbid question. But no one would ever say, do you want to be remembered? We take it as read that we want to be remembered in life, right? We don't want to drift into obscurity. So in one sense, for all that there is pride going on in here in Genesis 11, I think it's quite a natural pride. We want to live for value. We want significance. We want to avoid obscurity. And I guess the question then becomes, how does that desire for significance play out? How does it affect our behavior, maybe distort our behavior? Where are we seeking significance? For the people of Babel, their quest for significance is all focused on this thing, the tower. I wonder what it's focused on for us, maybe a project at work or at home. But Genesis chapter 11 really serves as a warning, because they're proud, they're trying to make a name for themselves, they're seeking significance, and it doesn't work, because the heart of it, it's a proud move. They're trying to do it in their own strength rather than in God's strength. This is a warning against pride, but let's track it through and see how their pride plays out, because I think we might find that it gets slightly closer to the bone than we thought. So look, three thoughts on pride from these verses, and the first is, I think we see here the pride of humanity. Let's pick it up at verse 3. The people said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they had a brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. And they said, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. You can see the pride here. Let us make a name for ourselves. And what's at the heart of it is it's all about them, their name, their achievements, and therefore by definition it is not about God. So their pride is a godless pride. If you were to take a child to the transport museum, put them on a bus and tell them they could sit anywhere, they want to sit in the driver's seat, right? That's where we want to be. Well, that is pride, is to want to be in control. And if I'm in control, if I'm driving the bus, then and that is the situation here. God is absent, it's all about them. Do you notice those repeated words, let us make bricks, let us build a city, let us make a name for themselves. We've seen throughout this series in Genesis that we're made to live in relationship with God, to follow his plans, seeking his glory in his strength. But what is going on in Babel? Well, there's no sense of dependence on God. They'll build this tower themselves. There's no sense of seeking his glory. They're going to make glory for themselves. There's no sense of listening to him. They're going to pursue their own plans. Do you remember how God sent them out to multiply and fill the earth? It's as if they've heard God's plan and thought, thank you very much, I'll do it my own way. We'll take it from here. Rather than spreading out, they decide to gather and settle. And so it is a God-bless pride. So to use an illustration, I think I've used the pattern in talks before. Imagine you have a great concert pianist comes to town, and the posters go up for his concert. And immediately beforehand, we get a piano tuner in to tune the piano. And he decides he quite likes it, thank you very much. And so when the curtain goes up and the spotlight shines on the piano, there is the piano tuner. He's going to play his music in his way because he wants the applause. That is what is happening at Babel. It's about their glory, their plans, in their strength. This is the pride of humanity. But it is a hidden pride. And this is where what I've really been reflecting on as I've looked at this passage, is that if you were to ask us for our caricature of the proud person, it'd be someone walking around saying, look at me, I'm so clever, I'm so funny, I'm so good looking, whatever it is. But I don't think the people here are walking around Babel saying, look at me. They're saying, look at my tower. I've worked really hard at it, I've baked the bricks and everything, I'm really pleased with it. Their pride, and it is pride, is focused on something else. The tower, all their hopes, dreams, energies are going into that tower. But you know it's pride, because if you said to them, where is God in this project? There'd be a confused silence, because he's not there. I think for many of us, the pride in our hearts won't play out in us being so crass as to walk around the Palatine Basin going, look at me, I'm so great. Where we'll see it is that it'll be focused on something else. Yeah, great to see you. Come on in. I've just got someone else joining us. We'll just pause a sec. Just a reminder, if you're online, do hit the mute button. I think we're not all on mute online. Hey, guys. So we're just looking, great to see, we're just looking at Genesis chapter 11 and just talking about how as the people build the Tower of Babel, it's a really expression of pride, of self-reliance. And the thing that I think is particularly interesting is that we often think of pride as people saying, look at me, I'm so great. They're saying, look at my tower, it's all about the tower. So it doesn't look like they're boasting in themselves, but nonetheless, their tower is their own project without God at the centre of it. And I guess that we may therefore find something equivalent, some kind of project, some dream, perhaps some sort of thing that's going on at work, which in itself is harmless, but it's absorbing us, all our energies, all our time, building this thing. If you ask me what I've been up to this week, I'll be quick to say I've been working on this particular project. But if you were to say to me, where is God in this? I don't know. I hadn't really thought about it, that moment of confusion. And I think that's what you're seeing with Babel. Maybe it's a project where, like the people of Babel, we're looking for significance in it. It's really about our status rather than God's glory. Maybe it's a project of work we care so strongly about that I'm willing to bend the truth or put people down in order to achieve it rather than pursuing God's ways. Maybe it's a piece of work that I cannot put down because without me, it just won't happen because I'm depending on myself rather than God. We need to ask, where is God in this? You know, it's a bit of a cheesy question, but it's worth saying, what is your equivalent of the Tower of Babel in your life? That project that consumes all your energy, and it may be a good thing, but it's not really got God in it. It's not about his glory. I'm not doing it in his strength, and I'm not doing it in his ways. I'm seeking significance. So their pride, it's a godless pride. It is a focused pride. And it is fearful. Because if I've put all my hopes on one particular project to give me a sense of significance in life, then fear will very quickly follow behind it. So you can see in verse 4 of Genesis 11, they say, let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the whole earth. That is their fear. Their tower, yes, it's a boast, but it's also a refuge. It's the way that they're going to try and keep themselves safe. Once I've set my ambition on something, fear will follow it, the fear of losing it. If I'm seeking in the workplace to find a sense of significance and status and security, then very quickly on the back of that will come fear. Fear of redundancy, fear of being overlooked, fear of failure. I'll always be looking over my shoulder. I'll be waking up early in the morning already thinking about work. I'll be unable to enjoy my colleagues because I won't fully trust them. I wonder, what do you fear in life? What's the thing that if it was taken away from you, you would feel that sense of vulnerability, of insecurity? That's probably where our pride is lurking, even if we're not aware of it. So that's the pride of humanity I think you see in these verses. And what you then see is that God humbles the proud. So the very thing they fear is the thing that happens to them. So for all their bluster and grandiose talk, do you notice the tower is quite disappointing? So if you look at verse 5, you see that God came down to see the city and the tower which the children of man had built. So they've decided they're going to build this great big tower and it's going to reach up to the skies. And God has to come down from the skies to see it because it's so small and insignificant that he can't actually see it from heaven. It's kind of, it's this great project, but it's slightly disappointing. It's kind of a bit like if you've ever been to a swimming pool where they've got like a diving board, you know, and you go and stand on top of the diving board and it feels really high. And then you jump in, you get to the bottom, you look up, you realize it wasn't actually that high at all. I think that's the sense here. You know, they built this tower, they think it's really impressive. And God's saying, hang on a minute, I've got to come down and see this thing. It disappoints. And I think often these projects that we pour ourselves into without God at the center, they're disappointing. And that's why we have to keep building the tower, as it were. We can never rest. We're always giving ourselves to our work. We're always chasing after things, pouring ourselves into it, because it's never done. Or to put it maybe more succinctly, if we're made to worship God's glory, if I start worshiping something else, it's always going to be disappointing because it's always going to be less than God if I'm pouring myself into some other project. So their pride disappoints, and it's dangerous. Look at verse 6. God says, behold, they're one people, and they have one language, and this is only the beginning of what they'll do, and nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. I think God's concern here is not the concern of a rival. He's not afraid of people. It's the concern of a loving creator who's created a world and sees where evil will lead. I mean, I think this is basically what we're seeing in the Ukraine at the moment, isn't it? The pride of one man unleashed and unbounded, and you see where it goes. I think that's the sense of what God's saying in verse 6. And so he judges humanity. So verse 7, he says, come, let us go down and confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech, as though the Lord dispersed them from over the face of the earth, and they left off building the city. These people wanted to gather, they wanted to settle, and now the very thing they feared happens. They're dispersed across the world. They thought they could avoid it in their own strength, and God takes it away from them. And in one sense, this is the story of humanity ever since, isn't it? Of rivalries and division, whether that plays out in war at the national level, or whether it plays out in the politics of the office and the workplace. Everyone has their own little tower. They're building away their own plans and their own strength to their own glory. And so what do you know? We're divided. There was a survey of people done in the UK a while ago that said that 82% of adults in this country think that religion is a source of division in our country, as if taking away religion would make us more united. And actually what Genesis 11 is telling us, it's our desire to do away with God that actually divides us as humanity. So this is the humbling of humanity. Where then is the hope on Wednesday lunchtime as we take a break from work? Well, I think the third thing you see here is the hope of humanity. You know those very famous verses in Luke 1 where God says he scatters the proud, but he exalts the humble. If the source of our problem is taking God's place and having godless projects and dreams, then the solution must be to come back to God, to pursue his glory and his strength and his plans. That is the hope of the humble. You know, if you go on holiday as a kid and you maybe go to the beach and you spend your time building sandcastles, in the evening you go back to a hotel or villa that's made of stone, right? People don't make houses of sand. Because so often the projects that we build, they're like sand castles. You know, we need to be constantly shoring up the walls. They're constantly disappointing. They're not what we hoped. But if we build on the promises of God, well, then we're building with stone. So as we've been through Genesis 1 to 11, whenever God has judged people, we've seen him showing forth grace. So you remember Adam and Eve, he made garments for them. Cain and Abel, he protected Cain. But here, there isn't grace in chapter 11 of Genesis, because the grace is coming in chapter 12, and that'll be a talk for another time. But really, after scattering the people, God then appears to Abraham. And what he promises to Abraham is the very thing that the people of Babel were seeking. So they were wanting to gather people, and God promises to make Abraham a great nation. At Babel, they wanted to secure a home, and God promises Abraham a land. At Babel, they wanted to find security and blessing, and God promises that to Abraham. They wanted to find significance, and God will bless the nations through Abraham. In other words, it's in God and in his promises that we'll find this significance and this worth and this security that we so often seek elsewhere. Now, ultimately, those promises to us are fulfilled in Christ through the forgiveness of the cross, in which I find that through Jesus' forgiveness, I can enter heaven into a world of eternal blessing and security that will never slip away from me into oblivion. If my hopes and dreams and energies are set on Christ rather than my own plans and ambitions, then I find a true security that lasts, because God's strength is greater than my strength, and so he can make his plans come to bear. Does that mean it's wrong to work hard at work, to work hard at a particular project, or to try and serve people? Well, no, but the question is, what's at the heart of it? I think if I'm trying to put Jesus at the heart of everything, the questions that I will ask will change slightly. I'll start saying, well, how can I glorify God's name at work rather than just simply pursuing my own status? What is his desire for the way that I go about my work rather than my desire for my ambitions? What would it look like to trust him with my career progression rather than just to pursue my own schemes to achieve it? It's that, where is God in this question? And I'm going to want to try and get God right at the heart of my work life. So there's a hope for the humble that is personal, but I think particularly here we see a hope for the humble that is corporate. I've never run the London Marathon, but I gather that, you know, when you're training for it, it's quite lonely. It's just pounding the streets on your own, constantly looking at your watch, trying to beat your personal best. But when you get to the day itself, you're a part of something bigger. And I think that as Christians, what we see is that as we trust in Jesus, we're a part of something bigger. You know, Jesus lifts us from our own little towers and our ambitions and our goals to be a part of something bigger, to be a part of his people. You know, there's a theme of scatter and gathering that runs throughout the Bible. God scatters people at the Tower of Babel. And from here on in through Scripture, he gathers people. Jesus says he's come to gather the lost sheep of Israel. He says that as he's lifted up, he gathers a people to himself. As the early church went out, they gathered people from every nation. And when you get right to the end of the Bible, Revelation chapter 7, famous words. John writes, "After this I looked, and behold, a great multitude that no one could number, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages, standing before the throne." And the point is not just that it's a lot of people, but that it's people from every nation, language and tongue. The curse of Babel has been undone now, as everyone is gathered in together. The barriers are truly brought down. So this then is a hope for us together. And I think as I begin to grasp this, it'll affect my view of myself. You know, pride is fundamentally about me, isn't it? And me achieving my status. Now I begin to see I'm some part of something bigger together, that I want to worship God with other people, to be a part of something bigger. It'll affect my view of other Christians, that actually I'll want to support them and to gather with them, to meet with them. It's something I hope we do at Paddington Talks. It's great to have been online and COVID. It's great to be together in the room and able to encourage each other. And it'll affect our view of society. I'll find significance in my workplace, not just viewing work as a place to perform or to achieve or to make a name for myself, but actually a place in which I can seek to glorify God by living to his glory, trusting in his strength and pointing others to him. And again, I hope that at Paddington Talks we can encourage each other in reminding ourselves of God's glory in the middle of a busy working day. So look, that's some thoughts from Genesis 11. At heart, I think what we're trying to say is that we're made to seek God's glory in his strength according to his plans. The heart of pride is to seek my glory and my strength according to my plans. And I think what Genesis is doing is calling us back to submit to God, to find our sense of significance, not in the little projects that I build aside from God, but by putting God and his glory right at the heart of everything.